any bit smug from old habit. I'm the only one like that for him. We don't know why he can't. Weird, Jacob said. Yeah, the smugness faded. It probably means there's something wrong with my brain, I admitted. I already knew there was something wrong with your brain, Jacob muttered. Thanks. The sun broke through the clouds suddenly, a surprise I hadn't been expecting, and I had to narrow my eyes against the glare off the water. Everything changed color. The waves turned from gray to blue, the trees from dull olive to brilliant jade, and the rainbow-hued pebbles glittered like jewels. We squinted for a moment, letting our eyes adjust. There were no sounds beside the hollow roar of the waves that echoed from every side of the sheltered harbor, the soft grinding of the stones against each other under the water's movement, and the cry of gulls high overhead. It was very peaceful. Jacob settled closer to me, so that he was leaning against my arm. He was so warm. After a minute of this, I shrugged out of my rain jacket. He made a little sound of contentment in the back of his throat and rested his cheek on the top of my head. I could feel the sun heat my skin, though it was not quite as warm as Jacob, and I wondered idly how long it would take me to burn. Absent-mindedly, I twisted my right hand to the side and watched the sunlight glitter subtly off the scar James had left there. What are you thinking about? He murmured. The sun. It's nice. What are you thinking about? I asked. He chuckled to himself. I was remembering that moronic movie you took me to, and Mike Newton puking all over everything. I laughed, too, surprised by how time had changed the memory. It used to be one of stress, of confusion. So much had changed that night, and now I could laugh. It was the last night Jacob and I had had before he'd learned the truth about his heritage. The last human memory. An oddly pleasant memory now. I miss that, Jacob said. The way it used to be so easy, uncomplicated. I'm glad I've got a good memory, he sighed. He felt the sudden tension in my body as his words triggered a memory of my own. What is it? He asked. About that good memory of yours. I pulled away from him so that I could read his face. At the moment, it was confused. Do you mind telling me what you were doing Monday morning? You were thinking something that bothered Edward. Bothered wasn't quite the word for it, but I wanted an answer, so I thought it was best not to start out too severely. Jacob's face brightened with understanding, and he laughed. I was just thinking about you. Didn't like that much, did he? Me? What about me? Jacob laughed, with a harder edge this time. I was remembering the way you looked that night Sam found you. I've seen it in his head, and it's like I was there. That memory has always haunted Sam, you know. And then I remembered how you looked the first time you came to my place. I bet you don't even realize what a mess you were then, Bella. It was weeks before you started to look human again. And I remembered how you always used to have your arms wrapped around yourself, trying to hold yourself together. Jacob winced, and then shook his head. It's hard for me to remember how sad you were, and it wasn't my fault. So I figured it would be harder for him. And I thought he ought to get a look at what he'd done. I smacked his shoulder. It hurt my hand. Jacob Black, don't you ever do that again. Promise me you won't. No way. I haven't had that much fun in months. So help me, Jake. Oh, get a grip, Bella. When am I ever going to see him again? Don't worry about it. I got to my feet, and he caught my hand as I started to walk away. I tried to tug free. I'm leaving, Jacob. No, don't go yet, he protested, his hand tightening around mine. I'm sorry. And okay, I won't do it again. Promise. I sighed. Thanks, Jake. Come on, we'll go back to my house, he said eagerly. Actually, I think I really do need to go. Angela Weber is expecting me, and I know Alice is worried. I don't want to upset her too much. But you just got here. It feels that way, I agreed. I glared up at the sun, somehow already directly overhead. How had the time passed so quickly? His eyebrows pulled down over his eyes. I don't know when I'll see you again, he said in a hurt voice. I'll come back the next time he's away, I promised impulsively. Away? Jacob rolled his eyes. That's a nice way to describe what he's doing. Disgusting parasites. If you can't be nice, I won't come back at all, I threatened, trying to pull my hand free. He refused to let go. Ah, don't be mad, he said, grinning. Knee-jerk reaction. If I'm going to try to come back again, you're going to have to get something straight, okay? He waited. See, I explained, I don't care who's a vampire and who's a werewolf. That's irrelevant. You are Jacob, and he is Edward, and I am Bella, and nothing else matters. His eyes narrowed slightly. But I am a werewolf, he said unwillingly. And he is a vampire, he added with obvious revulsion. And I'm a Virgo, I shouted, exasperated. He raised his eyebrows, measuring my expression with curious eyes. Finally, he shrugged. If you can really see it that way. I can. I do. Okay. Just Bella and Jacob. None of those freaky Virgos here. He smiled at me, the warm, familiar smile that I had missed so much. I felt the answering smile spread across my face. I've really missed you, Jake, I admitted impulsively. Me too. His smile widened. His eyes were happy and clear, free for once of the angry bitterness. More than you know. Will you come back soon? As soon as I can, I promised. Chapter 6. Switzerland. As I drove home, I wasn't paying much attention to the road that shimmered wetly in the sun. I was thinking about the flood of information Jacob had shared with me, trying to sort it out, to force it all to make sense. Despite the overload, I felt lighter. Seeing Jacob smile, having all the secrets thrashed out, it didn't make things perfect, but it made them better. I was right to have gone. Jacob needed me. And obviously, I thought as I squinted into the glare, there was no danger. It came out of nowhere. One minute there was nothing but bright highway in my rearview mirror. The next minute, the sun was glinting off of a silver Volvo right on my tail. Oh, crap, I whimpered. I considered pulling over, but I was too much of a coward to face him right away. I'd been counting on some prep time, and having Charlie nearby as a buffer. At least that would force him to keep his voice down. The Volvo followed inches behind me. I kept my eyes on the road ahead. Chicken through and through, I drove straight to Angela's without once meeting the gaze I could feel burning a hole in my mirror. He followed me until I pulled to the curb in front of the Weber's house. He didn't stop, and I didn't look up as he passed. I didn't want to see the expression on his face. I ran up the short concrete walk to Angela's door as soon as he was out of sight. Ben answered the door before I could finish knocking, like he'd been standing right behind it. Hey, Bella, he said, surprised. Hi, Ben. Is Angela here? I wondered if Angela had forgotten our plans and cringed at the thought of going home early. Sure, Ben said, just as Angela called, Bella, and appeared at the top of the stairs. Ben peered around at me as we both heard the sound of a car on the road. The sound didn't scare me. This engine stuttered to a stop, followed by the loud pop of a backfire. Nothing like the purr of the Volvo. This must be the visitor Ben had been waiting for. Austin's here, Ben said as Angela reached his side. A horn honked on the street. I'll see you later, Ben promised. Miss you already. He threw his arm around Angela's neck and pulled her face down to his height so that he could kiss her enthusiastically. After a second of this, Austin honked again. Bye, Ange. Love you, Ben shouted as he dashed past me. Angela swayed, her face slightly pink, then recovered herself and waved until Ben and Austin were out of sight. Then she turned to me and grinned ruefully. Thank you for doing this, Bella, she said, from the bottom of my heart. Not only are you saving my hands from permanent injury, you also just spared me 2 long hours of a plotless, badly dubbed martial arts film, she sighed in relief. Happy to be of service. I was feeling a bit less panicked, able to breathe a little more evenly. It felt so ordinary here. Angela's easy human dramas were oddly reassuring. It was nice to know that life was normal somewhere. I followed Angela up the stairs to her room. She kicked toys out of the way as she went. The house was unusually quiet. Where's your family? My parents took the twins to a birthday party in Port Angeles. I can't believe you're really going to help me with this. Ben's pretending he has tendonitis, she made a face. I don't mind at all, I said, and then I walked into Angela's room and saw the stacks of waiting envelopes. Oh, I gasped. Angela turned to look at me, apologies in her eyes. I could see why she'd been putting this off, and why Ben had weaseled out. I thought you were exaggerating, I admitted. I wish. Are you sure you want to do this? Put me to work. I've got all day. Angela divided a pile in half and put her mother's address book between us on her desk. For a while we concentrated, and there was just the sound of our pens scratching quietly across the paper. What's Edward doing tonight? She asked after a few minutes. My pen dug into the envelope I was working on. Emmett's home for the weekend. They're supposed to be hiking. You say that like you're not sure. I shrugged. You're lucky Edward has his brothers for all the hiking and camping. I don't know what I'd do if Ben didn't have Austin for the guy stuff. Yeah, the outdoors thing is not really for me, and there's no way I'd ever be able to keep up. Angela laughed. I prefer the indoors myself. She focused on her pile for a minute. I wrote out 4 more addresses. There was never any pressure to fill a pause with meaningless chatter around Angela. Like Charlie, she was comfortable with silence. But like Charlie, she was also too observant sometimes. Is something wrong? She asked in a low voice now. You seem anxious. I smiled sheepishly. Is it that obvious? Not really. She was probably lying to make me feel better. You don't have to talk about it unless you want to, she assured me. I'll listen if you think it will help. I was about to say thanks, but no thanks. After all, there were just too many secrets I was bound to keep. I really couldn't discuss my problems with someone human. That was against the rules. And yet, with a strange, sudden intensity, that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to talk to a normal human girlfriend. I wanted to moan a little bit, like any other teenage girl. I wanted my problems to be that simple. It would also be nice to have someone outside the whole vampire-werewolf mess to put things in perspective. Someone unbiased. I'll mind my own business, Angela promised, smiling down at the address she was working on. No, I said. You're right. I am anxious. It's Edward. What's wrong? It was so easy to talk to Angela. When she asked a question like that, I could tell that she wasn't just morbidly curious or looking for gossip, like Jessica would have been. She cared that I was upset. Oh, he's mad at me. That's hard to imagine, she said. What's he mad about? I sighed. Do you remember Jacob Black? Ah, she said. Yeah. He's jealous. No, not jealous. I should have kept my mouth shut. There was no way to explain this right, but I wanted to keep talking anyway. I hadn't realized I was so starved for human conversation. Edward thinks Jacob is a bad influence, I guess. Sort of dangerous. You know how much trouble I got in a few months back. It's all ridiculous, though. I was surprised to see Angela shaking her head. What? I asked. Bella, I've seen how Jacob Black looks at you. I'd bet the real problem is jealousy. It's not like that with Jacob. For you, maybe, but for Jacob... I frowned. Jacob knows how I feel. I've told him everything. Edward's only human, Bella. He's going to react like any other boy. I grimaced. I didn't have a response to that. She patted my hand. He'll get over it. I hope so. Jake's going through kind of a tough time. He needs me. You and Jacob are pretty close, aren't you? Like family, I agreed. And Edward doesn't like him. That must be hard. I wonder how Ben would handle that, she mused. I half smiled. Probably just like any other boy. She grinned. Probably. Then she changed the subject. Angela wasn't one to pry, and she seemed to sense I couldn't say any more. I got my dorm assignment yesterday. The farthest building from campus, naturally. Does Ben know where he's staying yet? The closest dorm to campus. He's got all the luck. How about you? Did you decide where you're going? I stared down, concentrating on the clumsy scrawl of my handwriting. For a second, I was distracted by the thought of Angela and Ben at the University of Washington. They would be off to Seattle in just a few months. Would it be safe then? Would the wild young vampire menace have moved elsewhere? Would there be a new place by then? Some other city flinching from horror movie headlines? Would those new headlines be my fault? I tried to shake it off and answered her question a beat late. Alaska, I think. The university there in Juneau. I could hear the surprise in her voice. Alaska? Oh, really? I mean, that's great. I just figured you'd go somewhere warmer. I laughed a little, still staring at the envelope. Yeah, Forks has really changed my perspective on life. And Edward? Though his name set butterflies fluttering in my stomach, I looked up and grinned at her. Alaska's not too cold for Edward either. She grinned back. Of course not. And then she sighed. It's so far. You won't be able to come home very often. I'll miss you. Will you email me? A swell of quiet sadness crashed over me. Maybe it was a mistake to get closer to Angela now. But wouldn't it be sadder still to miss out on these last chances? I shook off the unhappy thoughts so that I could answer her teasingly. If I can type again after this, I nodded toward the stack of envelopes I'd done. We laughed, and it was easy then to chat cheerfully about classes and majors while we finished the rest. All I had to do was not think about it. Anyway, there were more urgent things to worry about today. I helped her put the stamps on, too. I was afraid to leave. How's your hand? She asked. I flexed my fingers. I think I'll recover the full use of it someday. The door banged downstairs and we both looked up. Ange? Ben called. I tried to smile, but my lips trembled. I guess that's my cue to leave. You don't have to go. Though he's probably going to describe the movie for me in detail. Charlie will be wondering where I am anyway. Thanks for helping me. I had a good time, actually. We should do something like this again. It was nice to have some girl time. Definitely. There was a light knock on the bedroom door. Come in, Ben, Angela said. I got up and stretched. Hey, Bella, you survived. Ben greeted me quickly before going to take my place by Angela. He eyed our work. Nice job. Too bad there's nothing left to do. I would have... He let the thought trail off and then restarted excitedly. Ange, I can't believe you missed this one. It was awesome. There was this final fight sequence. The choreography was unbelievable. This one guy? Well, you're going to have to see it to know what I'm talking about. Angela rolled her eyes at me. See you at school, I said with a nervous laugh. She sighed. See you. I was jumpy on the way out to my truck, but the street was empty. I spent the whole drive glancing anxiously in all my mirrors, but there was never any sign of the silver car. His car was not in front of the house either, though that meant little. Bella? Charlie called when I opened the front door. Hey, Dad. I found him in the living room, in front of the TV. So, how was your day? Good, I said. Might as well tell him everything. He'd hear it from Billy soon enough. Besides, it would make him happy. They didn't need me at work, so I went down to La Push. There wasn't enough surprise in his face. Billy had already talked to him. How's Jacob? Charlie asked, attempting to sound indifferent. Good, I said, just as casual. You get over to the Webbers? Yep. We got all her announcements addressed. That's nice. Charlie smiled a wide smile. He was strangely focused, considering that there was a game on. I'm glad you spent some time with your friends today. Me too. I ambled toward the kitchen, looking for busy work. Unfortunately, Charlie had already cleaned up his lunch. I stood there for a few minutes, staring at the bright patch of light the sun made on the floor, but I knew I couldn't delay this forever. I'm going to go study, I announced glumly as I headed up the stairs. See you later, Charlie called after me. If I survive, I thought to myself. I shut my bedroom door carefully before I turned to face my room. Of course, he was there. He stood against the wall across from me, in the shadow beside the open window. His face was hard and his posture tense. He glared at me wordlessly. I cringed, waiting for the torrent, but it didn't come. He just continued to glare, possibly too angry to speak. Hi, I finally said. His face could have been carved from stone. I counted to 100 in my head, but there was no change. So I'm still alive, I began. A growl rumbled low in his chest, but his expression didn't change. No harm done, I insisted with a shrug. He moved. His eyes closed, and he pinched the bridge of his nose between the fingers of his right hand. Bella, he whispered, do you have any idea how close I came to crossing the line today, to breaking the treaty, and coming after you? Do you know what that would have meant? I gasped, and his eyes opened. They were as cold and hard as night. You can't, I said too loudly. I worked to modulate the volume of my voice so Charlie wouldn't hear, but I wanted to shout the words. Edward! They'd use any excuse for a fight. They'd love that. You can't ever break the rules. Maybe they aren't the only ones who would enjoy a fight. Don't you start, I snapped. You made the treaty. You stick to it. If he'd hurt you. Enough! I cut him off. There's nothing to worry about. Jacob isn't dangerous. Bella. He rolled his eyes. You aren't exactly the best judge of what is or isn't dangerous. I know I don't have to worry about Jake, and neither do you. He ground his teeth together. His hands were balled up in fists at his sides. He was still standing against the wall, and I hated the space between us. I took a deep breath and crossed the room. He didn't move when I wrapped my arms around him. Next to the warmth of the last of the afternoon sun streaming through the window, his skin felt especially icy. He seemed like ice, too, frozen the way he was. I'm sorry I made you anxious, I muttered. He sighed and relaxed a little. His arms wound around my waist. Anxious is a bit of an understatement, he murmured. It was a very long day. You weren't supposed to know about it, I reminded him. I thought you'd be hunting longer. I looked up at his face, at his defensive eyes. I hadn't noticed in the stress of the moment, but they were too dark. The rings under them were deep purple. I frowned in disapproval. When Alice saw you disappear, I came back. he explained. You shouldn't have done that. Now you'll have to go away again. My frown intensified. I can wait. That's ridiculous. I mean, I know she couldn't see me with Jacob, but you should have known. But I didn't, he broke in. And you can't expect me to let you. Oh, yes, I can, I interrupted him. That's exactly what I expect. This won't happen again. That's right, because you're not going to overreact next time. Because there isn't going to be a next time. I understand when you have to leave, even if I don't like it. That's not the same. I'm not risking my life. Neither am I. Werewolves constitute a risk. I disagree. I'm not negotiating this, Bella. Neither am I. His hands were in fists again. I could feel them against my back. The words popped out thoughtlessly. Is this really just about my safety? What do you mean? He demanded. You aren't. Angela's theory seemed sillier now than before. It was hard to finish the thought. I mean, you know better than to be jealous, right? He raised one eyebrow. Do I? Be serious. Easily. There's nothing remotely humorous about this. I frowned suspiciously. Or is this something else altogether? Some vampires and werewolves are always enemies nonsense? Is this just a testosterone-fueled? His eyes blazed. This is only about you. All I care is that you're safe. The black fire in his eyes was impossible to doubt. Okay, I sighed. I believe that. But I want you to know something. When it comes to all this enemies nonsense, I'm out. I am a neutral country. I am Switzerland. I refuse to be affected by territorial disputes between mythical creatures. Jacob is family. You are, well, not exactly the love of my life, because I expect to love you for much longer than that. The love of my existence. I don't care who's a werewolf and who's a vampire. If Angela turns out to be a witch, she can join the party, too. He stared at me silently through narrowed eyes. Switzerland, I repeated again for emphasis. He frowned at me, then sighed. Bella, he began, but he paused, and his nose wrinkled in disgust. What now? Well, don't be offended, but you smell like a dog, he told me. And then he smiled crookedly, so I knew the fight was over, for now. Edward had to make up for the missed hunting trip, and so he was leaving Friday night with Jasper, Emmett, and Carlisle to hit some reserve in Northern California with a mountain lion problem. We'd come to no agreement on the werewolf issue, but I didn't feel guilty calling Jake. During my brief window of opportunity, when Edward took the Volvo home before climbing back in through my window, to let him know I'd be coming over on Saturday again. It wasn't sneaking around. Edward knew how I felt. And if he broke my truck again, then I'd have Jacob pick me up. Forks was neutral, just like Switzerland, just like me. So when I got off work Thursday, and it was Alice rather than Edward waiting for me in the Volvo, I was not suspicious at first. The passenger door was open, and music I didn't recognize was shaking the frame when the bass played. Hey, Alice! I shouted over the wailing as I climbed in. Where's your brother? She was singing along to the song, her voice an octave higher than the melody, weaving through it with a complicated harmony. She nodded at me, ignoring my question as she concentrated on the music. I shut my door and put my hands over my ears. She grinned and turned the volume down until it was just background. Then she hit the locks and the gas in the same second. What's going on? I asked, starting to feel uneasy. Where is Edward? She shrugged. They left early. Oh. I tried to control the absurd disappointment. If he left early, that meant he'd be back sooner, I reminded myself. All the boys went, and we're having a slumber party, she announced in a trilling, sing-song voice. A slumber party? I repeated, the suspicion finally settling in. "Aren't you excited?" she crowed. I met her animated gaze for a long second. "You're kidnapping me, aren't you?" She laughed and nodded. "Till Saturday. Esme cleared it with Charlie. You're staying with me 2 nights, and I will drive you to and from school tomorrow." I turned my face to the window, my teeth grinding together. "Sorry," Alice said, not sounding in the least bit penitent. "He paid me off." "How?" I hissed through my teeth. "The Porsche. It's exactly like the one I stole in Italy," she sighed happily. "I'm not supposed to drive it around Forks, but if you want, we could see how long it takes to get from here to L.A. I bet I could have you back by midnight." I took a deep breath. "I think I'll pass," I sighed, repressing a shudder. We wound, always too fast, down the long drive. Alice pulled around to the garage, and I quickly looked over the cars. Emmett's big Jeep was there, with a shiny canary-yellow Porsche between it and Rosalie's red convertible. Alice hopped out gracefully and went to stroke her hand along the length of her bribe. "Pretty, isn't it?" "Pretty over the top," I grumbled, incredulous. "He gave you that just for 2 days of holding me hostage?" Alice made a face. A second later, comprehension came, and I gasped in horror. "It's for every time he's gone, isn't it?" She nodded. I slammed my door and stomped toward the house. She danced along next to me, still unrepentant. "Alice, don't you think this is just a little bit controlling? Just a tiny bit psychotic, maybe?" "Not really," she sniffed. "You don't seem to grasp how dangerous a young werewolf can be, especially when I can't see them. Edward has no way to know if you're safe. You shouldn't be so reckless." My voice turned acidic. "Yes, because a vampire slumber party is the pinnacle of safety-conscious behavior." Alice laughed. "I'll give you a pedicure and everything," she promised. It wasn't so bad, except for the fact that I was being held against my will. Esme brought Italian food, the good stuff, all the way from Port Angeles, and Alice was prepared with my favorite movies. Even Rosalie was there, quietly in the background. Alice did insist on the pedicure, and I wondered if she was working from a list, maybe something she compiled from watching bad sitcoms. "How late do you want to stay at Angeles?" And Alice was prepared with my favorite movies. Even Rosalie was there, quietly in the background. Alice did insist on the pedicure, and I wondered if she was working from a list, maybe something she compiled from watching bad sitcoms. "How late do you want to stay up?" she asked when my toenails were glistening a bloody red. Her enthusiasm remained untouched by my mood. "I don't want to stay up. We have school in the morning," she pouted. "Where am I supposed to sleep, anyway?" I measured the couch with my eyes. It was a little short. "Can't you just keep me under surveillance at my house?" "What kind of a slumber party would that be?" Alice shook her head in exasperation. "You're sleeping in Edward's room." I sighed. His black leather sofa was longer than this one. Actually, the gold carpet in his room was probably thick enough that the floor wouldn't be half bad either. "Can I go back to my place to get my things at least?" She grinned. "Already taken care of. Am I allowed to use your phone? Charlie knows where you are." "I wasn't going to call Charlie," I frowned. "Apparently, I have some plans to cancel." "Oh," she deliberated. "I'm not sure about that." "Alice," I whined loudly. "Come on." "Okay, okay," she said, flitting from the room. She was back in half a second, cell phone in hand. "He didn't specifically prohibit this," she murmured to herself as she handed it to me. I dialed Jacob's number, hoping he wasn't out running with his friends tonight. Luck was with me. Jacob was the one to answer. "Hello?" "Hey, Jake, it's me. Alice watched me with expressionless eyes for a second, before she turned and went to sit between Rosalie and Esme on the sofa. "Hi, Bella," Jacob said, suddenly cautious. "What's up?" "Nothing good. I can't come over Saturday after all." It was silent for a minute. "Stupid bloodsucker," he finally muttered. "I thought he was leaving. Can't you have a life when he's gone? Or does he lock you in a coffin?" I laughed. "I don't think that's funny." "I'm only laughing because you're close," I told him. "But he's going to be here Saturday, so it doesn't matter." "Will he be feeding there in Forks, then?" Jacob asked cuttingly. "No." I didn't let myself get irritated with him. I wasn't that far from being as angry as he was. "He left early." "Oh. Well, hey, come over now, then," he said with sudden enthusiasm. "It's not that late. Or I'll come up to Charlie's." "I wish." "I'm not at Charlie's," I said sourly. "I'm kind of being held prisoner." He was silent as that sunk in, and then he growled. "We'll come and get you," he promised in a flat voice, slipping automatically into a plural. A chill slid down my spine, but I answered in a light and teasing voice. "Tempting? I have been tortured." Alice painted my toenails. "I'm serious." "Don't be. They're just trying to keep me safe," he growled again. "I know it's silly, but their hearts are in the right place." "Their hearts," he scoffed. "Sorry about Saturday," I apologized. "I've got to hit the sack." "The couch," I corrected mentally. "But I'll call you again soon." "Are you sure they'll let you?" he asked in a scathing tone. "Not completely," I sighed. "Night, Jake." "See you around." Alice was abruptly at my side, her hand held out for the phone, but I was already dialing. She saw the number. "I don't think he'll have his phone on him," she said. "I'll leave a message." The phone rang four times, followed by a beep. There was no greeting. "You are in trouble," I said slowly, emphasizing each word. "Enormous trouble. Angry grizzly bears are going to look tame next to what is waiting for you at home." I snapped the phone shut and placed it in her waiting hand. "I'm done." She grinned. "This hostage stuff is fun." "I'm going to sleep now," I announced, heading for the stairs. Alice tagged along. "Alice," I sighed, "I'm not going to sneak out. You would know if I was planning to, and you'd catch me if I tried." "I'm just going to show you where your things are," she said innocently. Edward's room was at the farthest end of the third floor hallway, hard to mistake even when the huge house had been less familiar. But when I switched the light on, I paused in confusion. Had I picked the wrong door? Alice giggled. It was the same room, I realized quickly. The furniture had just been rearranged. The couch was pushed to the north wall, and the stereo shoved up against the vast shelves of CDs to make room for the colossal bed that now dominated the central space. The southern wall of glass reflected the scene back like a mirror, making it look twice as bad. It matched. The coverlet was a dull gold, just lighter than the walls. The frame was black, made of intricately patterned wrought iron. Sculpted metal roses wound in vines up the tall posts and formed a bowery lattice overhead. My pajamas were folded neatly on the foot of the bed, my bag of toiletries to one side. "What the hell is all this?" I spluttered. "You didn't really think he would make you sleep on the couch, did you?" I mumbled unintelligibly as I stalked forward to snatch my things off the bed. "I'll give you some privacy," Alice laughed. "See you in the morning." After my teeth were brushed and I was dressed, I grabbed a puffy feather pillow off the huge bed and dragged the gold cover to the couch. I knew I was being silly, but I didn't care. Porsches as bribes and king-sized beds in houses where nobody slept. It was beyond irritating. I flipped off the lights and curled up on the sofa, wondering if I was too annoyed to sleep. In the dark, the glass wall was no longer a black mirror doubling the room. The light of the moon brightened the clouds outside the window. As my eyes adjusted, I could see the diffused glow highlighting the tops of the trees and glinting off a small slice of the river. I watched the silver light, waiting for my eyes to get heavy. There was a light knock on the door. "What, Alice?" I hissed. I was on the defensive, imagining her amusement when she saw my makeshift bed. "It's me," Rosalie said softly, opening the door enough that I could see the silver glow touch her perfect face. "Can I come in?" Chapter 7. Unhappy Ending. Rosalie hesitated in the doorway, her breathtaking face unsure. "Of course," I replied, my voice an octave high with surprise. "Come on in." I sat up, sliding to the end of the sofa to make room. My stomach twisted nervously as the one Cullen who did not like me moved silently to sit down in the open space. I tried to come up with a reason why she would want to see me, but my mind was a blank on that point. "Do you mind talking to me for a few minutes?" she asked. "I didn't wake you or anything, did I?" Her eyes shifted to the stripped bed and back to my couch. "No, I was awake. Sure, we can talk." I wondered if she could hear the alarm in my voice as clearly as I could. She laughed lightly, and it sounded like a chorus of bells. "She so rarely leaves you alone," she said. "I figured I'd better make the best of this opportunity." What did she want to say that couldn't be said in front of Edward? My hands twisted and untwisted around the edge of the comforter. "Please don't think I'm horribly interfering," Rosalie said, her voice gentle and almost pleading. She folded her hands in her lap and looked down at them as she spoke. "I'm sure I've hurt your feelings enough in the past, and I don't want to do that again." "Don't worry about it, Rosalie. My feelings are great. What is it?" She laughed again, sounding oddly embarrassed. "I'm going to try to tell you why I think you should stay human. Why I would stay human if I were you." "Oh." She smiled at the shocked tone of my voice, and then she sighed. "Did Edward ever tell you what led to this?" she asked, gesturing to her glorious, immortal body. I nodded slowly, suddenly somber. "He said it was close to what happened to me that time in Port Angeles, only no one was there to save you." I shuddered at the memory. "Is that really all he told you?" she asked. "Yes," I said, my voice blank with confusion. "Was there more?" She looked up at me and smiled. It was a harsh, bitter, but still stunning expression. "Yes," she said, "there was more." I waited while she stared out the window. She seemed to be trying to calm herself. "Would you like to hear my story, Bella? It doesn't have a happy ending, but which of ours does? If we had happy endings, we'd all be under gravestones now." I nodded, though I was frightened by the edge in her voice. "I lived in a different world than you do, Bella. My human world was a much simpler place. It was 1933. I was 18, and I was beautiful. My life was perfect." She stared out the window at the silver clouds, her expression far away. "My parents were thoroughly middle class. My father had a stable job in a bank, something I realize now that he was smug about. He saw his prosperity as a reward for talent and hard work, rather than acknowledging the luck involved. I took it all for granted then. In my home, it was as if the Great Depression was only a troublesome rumor. Of course, I saw the poor people, the ones who weren't as lucky. My father left me with the impression that they'd brought their troubles on themselves. It was my mother's job to keep our house and myself and my two younger brothers in spotless order. It was clear that I was both her first priority and her favorite. I didn't fully understand at the time, but I was always vaguely aware that my parents weren't satisfied with what they had, even if it was so much more than most. They wanted more. They had social aspirations, social climbers, I suppose you could call them. My beauty was like a gift to them. They saw so much more potential in it than I did. They weren't satisfied, but I was. I was thrilled to be me, to be Rosalie Hale. Pleased that men's eyes watched me everywhere I went, from the year I turned 12. Delighted that my girlfriends sighed with envy when they touched my hair. Happy that my mother was proud of me, and that my father liked to buy me pretty dresses. I knew what I wanted out of life, and there didn't seem to be any way that I wouldn't get exactly what I wanted. I wanted to be loved, to be adored. I wanted to have a huge, flowery wedding, where everyone in town would watch me walk down the aisle on my father's arm and think I was the most beautiful thing they'd ever seen. Admiration was like air to me, Bella. I was silly and shallow, but I was content. She smiled, amused at her own evaluation. My parents' influence had been such that I also wanted the material things of life. I wanted a big house with elegant furnishings that someone else would clean, and a modern kitchen that someone else would cook in. As I said, shallow. Young and very shallow. And I didn't see any reason why I wouldn't get these things. There were a few things I wanted that were more meaningful. One thing in particular. My very closest friend was a girl named Vera. She married young, just 17. She married a man my parents would never have considered for me, a carpenter. A year later, she had a son, a beautiful little boy with dimples and curly black hair. It was the first time I'd ever felt truly jealous of anyone else in my entire life. She looked at me with unfathomable eyes. It was a different time. I was the same age as you, but I was ready for it all. I yearned for my own little baby. I wanted my own house, and a husband who would kiss me when he got home from work, just like Vera. Only I had a very different kind of house in mind. It was hard for me to imagine the world that Rosalie had known. Her story sounded more like a fairy tale than history to me. With a slight shock, I realized that this was very close to the world that Edward would have experienced when he was human, the world he had grown up in. I wondered, while Rosalie sat silent for a moment, if my world seemed as baffling to him as Rosalie's did to me. Rosalie sighed, and when she spoke again, her voice was different, the wistfulness gone. In Rochester, there was one royal family, the Kings, ironically enough. Royce King owned the bank my father worked at, and nearly every other really profitable business in town. That's how his son, Royce King II, her mouth twisted around the name, it came out through her teeth, saw me the first time. He was going to take over at the bank, and so he began overseeing the different positions. 2 days later, my mother conveniently forgot to send my father's lunch to work with him. I remember being confused when she insisted that I wear my white organza and roll my hair up just to run over to the bank. Rosalie laughed without humor. I didn't notice Royce watching me particularly. Everyone watched me. But that night, the first of the roses came. Every night of our courtship, he sent a bouquet of roses to me. My room was always overflowing with them. It got to the point that I would smell like roses when I left the house. Royce was handsome, too. He had lighter hair than I did, and pale blue eyes. He said my eyes were like violets, and then those started showing up alongside the roses. My parents approved. That's putting it mildly. This was everything they'd dreamed of. And Royce seemed to be everything I'd dreamed of. The fairy tale prince come to make me a princess. Everything I wanted, yet it was still no more than I expected. We were engaged before I'd known him for 2 months. We didn't spend a great deal of time alone with each other. Royce told me he had many responsibilities at work, and when we were together, he liked people to look at us, to see me on his arm. I liked that too. There were lots of parties, dancing, and pretty dresses. When you were a king, every door was open for you, every red carpet rolled out to greet you. It wasn't a long engagement. Plans went ahead for the most lavish wedding. It was going to be everything I'd ever wanted. I was completely happy. When I called at Vera's, I no longer felt jealous. I pictured my fair-haired children playing on the huge lawns of the king's estate, and I pitied her. Rosalie broke off suddenly, clenching her teeth together. It pulled me out of her story, and I realized that the horror was not far off. There would be no happy ending, as she'd promised, because she'd been within reach of everything she'd wanted when her human life was cut short. "I was at Vera's that night," Rosalie whispered. Her face was smooth as marble and as hard. Her little Henry really was adorable, all smiles and dimples. He was just sitting up on his own. Vera walked me to the door as I was leaving, her baby in her arms and her husband at her side, his arm around her waist. He kissed her on the cheek when he thought I wasn't looking. That bothered me. When Royce kissed me, it wasn't quite the same, not so sweet somehow. I shoved that thought aside. Royce was my prince. Someday I would be queen. It was hard to tell in the moonlight, but it looked like her bone-white face got paler. It was dark in the streets, the lamps already on. I hadn't realized how late it was. She continued to whisper almost inaudibly. It was cold, too. Very cold for late April. The wedding was only a week away, and I was worrying about the weather as I hurried home. I can remember that clearly. I remember every detail about that night. I clung to it so hard in the beginning. I thought of nothing else. And so I remember this, when so many pleasant memories have faded away completely. She sighed and began whispering again. Yes, I was worrying about the weather. I didn't want to have to move the wedding indoors. I was a few streets from my house when I heard them. A cluster of men under a broken street lamp, laughing too loud. Drunk. I wished I'd called my father to escort me home, but the way was so short, it seemed silly. And then he called my name. Rose! He yelled, and the others laughed stupidly. I hadn't realized the drunks were so well-dressed. It was Royce and some of his friends, sons of other rich men. Here's my Rose, Royce shouted, laughing with them, sounding just as stupid. You're late. We're cold. You've kept us waiting so long. I'd never seen him drink before. A toast now and then at a party. He told me he didn't like champagne. I hadn't realized that he preferred something much stronger. He had a new friend. The friend of a friend come up from Atlanta. What did I tell you, John? Royce crowed, grabbing my arm and pulling me closer. Isn't she lovelier than all your Georgia peaches? The man named John was dark-haired and suntanned. He looked me over like I was a horse he was buying. It's hard to tell, he drawled slowly. She's all covered up. They laughed. Suddenly, Royce ripped my jacket from my shoulders. It was a gift from him, popping the brass buttons off. They scattered all over the street. Show him what you look like, Rose. He laughed again, and then he tore my hat out of my hair. The pins wrenched my hair from the roots, and I cried out in pain. They seemed to enjoy that, the sound of my pain. Rosalie looked at me suddenly, as if she'd forgotten I was there. I was sure my face was as white as hers, unless it was green. I won't make you listen to the rest, she said quietly. They left me in the street, still laughing as they stumbled away. They thought I was dead. They were teasing Royce that he would have to find a new bride. He laughed and said he'd have to learn some patience first. I waited in the road to die. It was cold, though there was so much pain that I was surprised it bothered me. It started to snow, and I wondered why I wasn't dying. I was impatient for death to come, to end the pain. It was taking so long. Carlyle found me then. He'd smelled the blood and come to investigate. I remember being vaguely irritated as he worked over me, trying to save my life. I'd never liked Dr. Cullen or his wife and her brother, as Edward pretended to be then. It had upset me that they were all more beautiful than I was, especially that the men were. But they didn't mingle in society, so I'd only seen them once or twice. I thought I'd died when he pulled me from the ground and ran with me because of the speed. It felt like I was flying. I remembered being horrified that the pain didn't stop. Then I was in a bright room, and it was warm. I was slipping away, and I was grateful as the pain began to dull. But suddenly, something sharp was cutting me, my throat, my wrists, my ankles. I screamed in shock, thinking he'd brought me there to hurt me more. Then fire started burning through me, and I didn't care about anything else. I begged him to kill me. When Esme and Edward returned home, I begged them to kill me too. Carlyle sat with me. He held my hand and said that he was so sorry, promising that it would end. He told me everything, and sometimes I listened. He told me what he was, what I was becoming. I didn't believe him. He apologized each time I screamed. Edward wasn't happy. I remember hearing them discuss me. I stopped screaming sometimes. It did no good to scream. "What were you thinking, Carlyle?" Edward said. "Rosalie Hale?" Rosalie imitated Edward's irritated tone to perfection. I didn't like the way he said my name, like there was something wrong with me. "I couldn't just let her die," Carlyle said quietly. "It was too much, too horrible, too much waste." "I know," Edward said, and I thought he sounded dismissive. It angered me. I didn't know then that he really could see exactly what Carlyle had seen. "It was too much waste. I couldn't leave her," Carlyle repeated in a whisper. "Of course you couldn't," Esme agreed. "People die all the time," Edward reminded him in a hard voice. "Don't you think she's just a little recognizable, though? The Kings will have to put up a huge search. Not that anyone suspects the fiend," he growled. It pleased me that they seemed to know that Royce was guilty. I didn't realize that it was almost over, that I was getting stronger, and that was why I was able to concentrate on what they were saying. The pain was beginning to fade from my fingertips. "What are we going to do with her?" Edward said disgustedly, or that's how it sounded to me at least. Carlyle sighed. "That's up to her, of course. She may want to go her own way." I'd believed enough of what he told me that his words terrified me. I knew that my life was ended, and there was no going back for me. I couldn't stand the thought of being alone. The pain finally ended, and they explained to me again what I was. This time I believed. I felt the thirst, my hard skin. I saw my brilliant red eyes. Shallow as I was, I felt better when I saw my reflection in the mirror the first time. Despite the eyes, I was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. She laughed at herself for a moment. It took some time before I began to blame the beauty for what had happened to me, for me to see the curse of it, to wish that I had been, well, not ugly, but normal, like Vera, so I could have been allowed to marry someone who loved me and have pretty babies. That's what I'd really wanted all along. It still doesn't seem like too much to have asked for. She was thoughtful for a moment, and I wondered if she'd forgotten my presence again. But then she smiled at me, her expression suddenly triumphant. "You know, my record is almost as clean as Carlyle's," she told me. "Better than Esme. 1,000 times better than Edward. I've never tasted human blood," she announced proudly. She understood my puzzled expression as I wondered why her record was only almost as clean. "I did murder 5 humans, she told me in a complacent tone, if you can really call them human, but I was very careful not to spill their blood. I knew I wouldn't be able to resist that, and I didn't want any part of them in me, you see. I saved Royce for last. I hoped that he would hear of his friend's deaths and understand, know what was coming for him. I hoped the fear would make the end worse for him. I think it worked. He was hiding inside a windowless room behind a door as thick as a bank vault's, guarded outside by armed men, and I caught up with him. Oops, 7 murders, she corrected herself. I forgot about his guards. They only took a second. I was overly theatrical. It was kind of childish, really. I wore a wedding dress I'd stolen for the occasion. He screamed when he saw me. He screamed a lot that night. Saving him for last was a good idea. It made it easier for me to control myself, to make it slower. She broke off suddenly and she glanced down at me. I'm sorry, she said in a chagrined voice. I'm frightening you, aren't I? I'm fine, I lied. I got carried away. Don't worry about it. I'm surprised Edward didn't tell you more about it. He doesn't like to tell other people's stories. He feels like he's betraying confidences because he hears so much more than just the parts they mean for him to hear. She smiled and shook her head. I probably ought to give him more credit. He's really quite decent, isn't he? I think so. I can tell. And she sighed. I haven't been fair to you either, Bella. Did he tell you why? Or was that too confidential? He said it was because I was human. He said it was harder for you to have someone on the outside who knew. Rosalie's musical laughter interrupted me. Now I really feel guilty. He's been much, much kinder to me than I deserve. She seemed warmer as she laughed, like she'd let down some guard that had never been absent in my presence before. What a liar that boy is, she laughed again. He was lying? I asked, suddenly wary. Well, that's probably putting it too strongly. He just didn't tell you the whole story. What he told you was true, even truer now than it was before. However, at the time, she broke off, chuckling nervously. It's embarrassing. You see, at first, I was mostly jealous because he wanted you and not me. Her words sent a thrill of fear through me. Sitting there in the silver light, she was more beautiful than anything else I could imagine. I could not compete with Rosalie. But you love Emmett, I mumbled. She shook her head back and forth, amused. I don't want Edward that way, Bella. I never did. I love him as a brother, but he's irritated me from the first moment I heard him speak. You have to understand, though, I was so used to people wanting me. And Edward wasn't the least bit interested. It frustrated me, even offended me in the beginning. But he never wanted anyone, so it didn't bother me long. Even when we first met Tanya's clan and Denali, all those females, Edward never showed the slightest preference. And then he met you. She looked at me with confused eyes. I was only half paying attention. I was thinking about Edward and Tanya and all those females. And my lips pressed together in a hard line. Not that you aren't pretty, Bella, she said, misreading my expression, but it just meant that he found you more attractive than me. I'm vain enough that I minded. But you said, at first, that doesn't still bother you, does it? I mean, we both know you're the most beautiful person on the planet. I laughed at having to say the words. It was so obvious. How odd that Rosalie should need such reassurances. Rosalie laughed too. Thanks, Bella. And no, it doesn't really bother me anymore. Edward has always been a little strange. She laughed again. But you still don't like me, I whispered. Her smile faded. I'm sorry about that. We sat in silence for a moment, and she didn't seem inclined to go on. Would you tell me why? Did I do something? Was she angry that I'd put her family, her Emmett, in danger? Time and time again? James? And now Victoria? No, you haven't done anything, she murmured. Not yet. I stared at her, perplexed. Don't you see, Bella? Her voice was suddenly more passionate than before, even while she told her unhappy story. You already have everything. You have a whole life ahead of you. Everything I want. And you're going to just throw it away? Can't you see that I trade everything I have to be you? You have the choice that I didn't have, and you're choosing wrong. I flinched back from her fierce expression. I realized my mouth had fallen open, and I snapped it shut. She stared at me for a long moment, and slowly the fervor in her eyes dimmed. Abruptly, she was abashed. And I was so sure that I could do this calmly. She shook her head, seeming a little dazed by the flood of emotion. It's just that it's harder now than it was then, when it was no more than vanity. She stared at the moon in silence. It was a few moments before I was brave enough to break into her reverie. Would you like me better if I chose to stay human? She turned back to me, her lips twitching into a hint of a smile. Maybe. You did get some of your happy ending, though, I reminded her. You got Emmett. I got half, she grinned. You know that I saved Emmett from a bear that was mauling him, and carried him home to Carlisle. But can you guess why I stopped the bear from eating him? I shook my head. With the dark curls, the dimples that showed even while he was grimacing in pain, the strange innocence that seemed so out of place on a grown man's face, he reminded me of Vera's little Henry. I didn't want him to die, so much that, even though I hated this life, I was selfish enough to ask Carlyle to change him for me. I got luckier than I deserved. Emmett is everything I would have asked for if I'd known myself well enough to know what to ask for. He's exactly the kind of person someone like me needs. And oddly enough, he needs me too. That part worked out better than I could have hoped. But there will never be more than the two of us. And I'll never sit on a porch somewhere, with him gray-haired by my side, surrounded by our grandchildren. Her smile was kind now. That sounds quite bizarre to you, doesn't it? In some ways you are much more mature than I was at 18. But in other ways, there are many things you've probably never thought about seriously. You're too young to know what you'll want in 10 years, 15 years, and too young to give it all up without thinking it through. You don't want to be rash about permanent things, Bella. She patted my head, but the gesture didn't feel condescending. I sighed. Just think about it a little. Once it's done, it can't be undone. Esme's made do with us as substitutes, and Alice doesn't remember anything human, so she can't miss it. You will remember, though. It's a lot to give up. But more to get in return, I didn't say aloud. Thanks, Rosalie. It's nice to understand, to know you better. I apologize for being such a monster, she grinned. I'll try to behave myself from now on. I grinned back at her. We weren't friends yet, but I was pretty sure she wouldn't always hate me so much. I'll let you sleep now. Rosalie's eyes